This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Well, folks, I don't know about you, but it's a lot of fun watching when the New Orleans Saints trounce a team as they did yesterday to the Carolina Panthers 47-10. We're joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Yeah, no, it's fun. I wasn't sure what the reaction was going to be after that game if it went a certain way, but I'm glad it went the way it went. Let's put that way.
You know, I'm one of those. I don't get overly critical one way. I'll take the W. I'll move on, and when they trounce a team, I'll move on with a bigger smile than ordinarily. You know, so I mean, I'm pretty simplistic in my view of this.
You know, it was funny. I was talking to Juwan Johnson in the locker room after the game, and he was like, man, it must have been a while since we've scored 47 points in a game. And I was actually thinking that on the sideline, too. And then I remembered, actually, wait, if you go back to week 18 of last season, they won 48-17. So it not only has it not been a while, literally two consecutive Saints games in the Superdome, they've scored 47 plus points. Yeah. And it really kind of underscores, like, this is the offense that everyone was convinced was going to be terrible. I think some people might have been off the mark with those takes. Obviously, week one, the Panthers sure look like a really bad football team, so we have to kind of take that result with a pretty large grain of salt. But you could have drawn up a lot of ways for this season to start, and that's probably the best possible way. So that's a good way to go into a really difficult Dallas matchup, feeling very positive about where things are for the Saints right now.
Well, there are a couple of things that really struck me. I was looking at the stats. It's just 7 yards shy of doubling the total yardage of the Carolina Panthers. It's rare that you see that, right? Our passing yardage, you know, we've seen those numbers before, roughly at 200. But rushing at 180, that's not something that you see very often, right?
No, I mean, it's funny. You look at a 47-point game, and, you know, I don't think they even top 400 total yards, right? Like, that's kind of an unusual number. You would think you put up 47 points, you must have been moving the ball all day. Well, it becomes a lot easier to do that when it's a complementary effort, right? Like, there were so many short fields in that game. The defense forced 3 turnovers. We went into that game thinking, hey, the strong safety spot is a major question, or the safety spot is a question in general, right? They kind of bandied about the idea of bringing in Justin Simmons. He went to Atlanta, and they said, hey, we'll stick with the guys we have. Well, all 3 of those safeties that are in kind of that rotation, Jordan Howden, Tyrann Mathieu, and Will Harris, all forced turnovers. Howden got his first career interception. Will Harris got an interception. Tyrann Mathieu forced a fumble. And that creates scenarios where, man, it's a lot easier to play offense when you're constantly in a positive game script, when you're not backed up at your end zone, when you're starting a drive at your 40 or their 40. The Saints had a touchdown drive that was 1 play, 6 seconds long in that game.
Yeah,
that's done to Juwan Johnson. So, I mean, you know, that's when I talked about this team this offseason, and people would say, well, how can things go well for this team? How is this team going to win games if things go the right way? And it's exactly what we saw. It's the defense supplying the offense with positive situations so that they don't have to get one-dimensional, right? You don't have to put the young tackles out on an island. You can run the ball. And that's, you know, I thought Trevor Penning had a great game based on, you know, what our expectations were from him and the development we've seen. And a big part of that is, hey, when you can sink your teeth into the game running the ball and you can impose your will that way, it becomes a lot easier to be an offensive lineman. Derek Carr had clean pockets all day. Again, it's, you know, I put up a column on WWL after every game, and I call it 3 up, 3 down. Usually it's not that difficult to find 3 downs in a game. I had to really reach for this one to try to come up with 3 things that didn't go well in this game. And, you know, it was fun to be in that building. It feels like it's been a while since they've had that type of energy, since I've seen opposing teams having to take timeouts on third down because they just can't get the call in because Bryce Young can't hear the speakers in his own helmet. It was fun. It was a flashback type day in the Superdome, I think.
I didn't get a chance to read your article yet, but I'm kind of curious your thoughts about tackling. I thought it was some of the best tackling they've done in a while.
Yeah, and especially when you consider week one is typically a rough tackling week. You don't get to do like real tackling in camp anymore. Like you only get so many padded practices, and even then, it's really just kind of, they call it thud tempo, which you're not really taking a guy fully to the ground. So, you know, you really only, you know, you're kind of rusty in the tackling part of the game until you get a couple weeks in. The Panthers made life really easy on the Saints, right? They couldn't throw the ball. Bryce Young, you know, I was curious how he was going to come out. He continues to look shell-shocked back there. I'm hopeful that he can turn it around. I like Bryce Young. I think that, you know, people are too quick to quit on young quarterbacks. But I didn't see much progression from him. I don't think he handled that situation very well at all. But no, I mean, I think DeMario probably wants that goal line play back, that fourth down play, which kind of gave me a flashback to the Packers game where Jordan Love had almost the exact same situation, kind of a two-way go. DeMario was kind of there at the goal line and couldn't get him down. Same thing happened against Jordan Love or against Bryce Young in this game. Paulson Adebo almost knocked it out. And you had kind of that obscure rule that everyone learned about in real time. But, I think that they tackled well. I think they covered well. You know, the injuries are a little concerning. Marshawn Lattimore went out with a hamstring. Willie Gay left with what looked like an injury. Not entirely sure what that is. Hopefully we learn more about that today. But all in all, all the things that you can control, I feel like the Saints controlled them in a positive way. And tackling was definitely one of those things.
Well, this is one of those must-win games, right, as we look at the first quarter of the season for them. And obviously, we go into Dallas this coming weekend. A little bit of a different story. They had a big win as well. So they're coming in with momentum. We're coming in with momentum. Your thoughts about this week's game?
Yeah, Micah Parsons is going to really be a test to this offensive line that I don't know if they got this week. You know, he looked at Jadeveon Clowney and said, hey, he's going to be lining up over Trevor Penning, and I'm concerned about that. Well, he didn't really do much, you know, and I'm not sure if maybe 31-year-old Jadeveon Clowney isn't the guy that I remember, but he didn't impact that game, and you got to give the offensive line credit. Now, Micah Parsons is an entirely different animal. That Dallas defense is very good. The offense is very good. You're not going to steamroll that team. If you think they're going to go in there and make it look even remotely like they did against the Panthers, you've got another thing coming. But, you know, I am interested. I think it's going to be kind of a measuring stick game. It's a tough environment going over there to Arlington, Jerry World. I think that's kind of where you're going to – like the Saints are going to walk in there extremely confident. And that's what you want to be. The Panthers are kind of like the free space in bingo, right? You only lose it if you don't mark it down. And they needed to come out of this game with confidence. They needed to, put their best foot forward so you can say, hey, you know, a lot of people were telling us going into this game, you're telling me now the Panthers are bad, but going into this game, everyone was telling me the Saints were just as bad. The Saints don't really have a chance to do much. And I think what they showed in that game is they are light years better than the Panthers. Now, how much better than the Panthers are they? We'll see. And I think these next two games where you get Dallas coming in, and then you host the Eagles. The whole time I kind of went in saying, hey, if you can, you got to beat the Panthers. That's a must win. And then I don't need you to beat the Cowboys and the Eagles, but I do need you to beat the Cowboys or the Eagles. I really want to come out of this stretch at 2-1, whether you're going and beat Dallas or you beat the Eagles at home. I really think you do need to win one of those games. And we'll see. Dak Prescott's a really good quarterback. I have a lot of respect for Dak Prescott. Trayvon Diggs is going to be looking for interceptions. Jaron Bland had a ton of interceptions last year. They have playmakers all over the place. So, I'm really excited. You know, there was a scenario where we go into that game and we're not excited because we're terrified of what might happen with a new offense and the offensive line. And I think the Saints have created a scenario where that's going to be a must-watch game. You know, people are going to be talking about that game going into next week as one of the highlights of the schedule. And that's a really fun thing to say when you talk about kind of how how low the interest level has been nationally around this team. I think that's going to start to change if you can put out more performances like you did this week.
Kamara had a great game. He seemed to be running with a level of assertiveness that some folks have said they hadn't seen in a while.
Yeah, you know, I think he's invested in bucking the idea that, you know, 29-year-old running back is just going to fall off a cliff and to never be seen again. You know, I've kind of said the whole time, if there's a drop off with Alvin, it's not something that I have seen. Like, I have not looked at him and said, man, the guy I saw in 2020 when he was running for 6 touchdowns against the Vikings, that's a different guy than the guy I've seen over the last 2-3 years. I just don't think that's true. I think the offense has been letting him down, and I think this was a good example of that. You know, one thing that Alvin told us in the preseason, when we asked him about this new offense and Clint Kubiak's approach, he used the word intentional. Right, like you're layering your play calls. You're calling things with a purpose so you can get to something else. Right, the first drive of that game was picture perfect in terms of what this offense is supposed to be like. Right, two successful runs get you a first down. You run a couple screens, get you into third and 4, I think, and then you take a deep shot. You set up the deep shot and you hit it to Rashid Shaheed, and that sets the tone of the entire game. Alvin being successful on first and second down is what allows you to set up that shot to Shaheed over the top. And, you know, and it's good for Alvin. You know, I think he's kind of the heart and soul of this team to an extent. You know, he's one of the few through lines that you can go back and say, okay, all that success from 2017 to 2020, he was there for all of it. He was a major part of it. And he kind of gives you that feeling that, like, oh, I remember this. I remember what this is supposed to be like. I remember what it felt like when this offense was humming. I remember what it felt like when the Superdome was rocking to the point that Jared Goff had to tape over his ear holes during the NFC Championship game and parts of the concourse were crumbling and falling down because the building was shaking. And when you see him running the ball the way he did yesterday, you kind of get those flashes and you see, like, okay, this offense does seem like it you can sink your teeth into it. And Derek Carr does feel like a quarterback that can get you to the playoffs. That's the type of performance you probably need out of Alvin. He's going to be the engine of this offense to an extent. And so it was good to see him kind of get that going. You know, he's a guy that we don't know whether he's going to be around past this season, but he has a legitimate chance to become the Saints' all-time leading rusher this year. I think he went into that game needing 672 yards to get it. Last year he ran for 693 yards. So for him to get there, it probably will come late in the year. He got off to a good start with 82 yards, I think, in this game. So, no, I'm excited for Alvin in this offense, and he did nothing to disprove that idea that we should be excited about it.
Jeff, you guys know so much more about this than I ever could learn. But I think with Alvin, like in the game yesterday, if I don't anticipate that he's going to run for a, you know, that we're going to run for 180 yards of rushing in games. But I think when Alvin breaks a couple, he makes Taysom Hill that much better, right? And in the way that they use those two guys and whether or not they're both in the game at the same time or not, I still believe that he will certainly help extend Taysom Hill in many ways. And I think Taysom Hill will be better and there's a lot more things that we can try with Taysom Hill as a result of Alvin's success. Your thoughts?
I mean, no question. And I put Jamal Williams in that conversation too. You know, his yards per carry didn't jump off the page. It was 3.5. But he's the guy that I want to get those hard yards, right? He's the guy that on third and one, I shouldn't have to hesitate of saying, hey, we're going to hand Jamal the ball and he's going to find a way to get those yards. I think we saw that yesterday in a way that we didn't see last year. And then he obviously had that 14-yard touchdown, which was nice to see him get a legitimate touchdown in the Superdome after the not so underhanded one they gave him at the end of last year. But no, Taysom, it's funny because Alvin after the game was talking about how, you know, some guys on the sideline will give him grief, like, that Taysom vultured another one of your touchdowns. And there would be times where, you know, Taysom would come over and actually apologize to him because he was like, hey, you know, my bad. You know, you got us all the way down to the one and they gave it to me. You know, and that, even in the Vikings game where Alvin ran for 6 touchdowns, it should have been 7, but they gave one to Taysom at the goal line.
Right.
And it's because Taysom is so effective in those situations, right? But that shouldn't be the only way you use Taysom. And I think you saw a glimpse of how they're going to use Taysom in that game. They're going to give him handoffs out of the backfield. They're going to let him run some QB power. We saw that on one rep where Derek Carr was actually on the field. He split out wide and used to catch the other team in a bad personnel to go against it. And we saw Taysom really close to catching a touchdown, you know, on the drive right before Foster Moreau caught his touchdown. But I did appreciate when Alvin got in the end zone and got called back on kind of a ticky-tack hold on Fuaga, Clint and Alvin confirmed this. Clint on the sideline was like, don't worry, we're going to get you. We're going to get it for you. And he just kept going back to him and going back to him and going back to him to a point where Alvin was like, hey, maybe it's time to give the ball to somebody else. I'm getting tired over here. But, no, he got in the end zone. And, you know, the way they can use those three guys in such unique ways, you know, in very different ways, right? And taking advantage of their individual skill sets in ways that other teams just can't match is an advantage, especially when you're trying to get those hard yards, when you're trying to convert, you know, third and short, and you can go so many different ways with it. It's the way Clint called this game is exactly how you would hope it would go. And, you know, we're going to talk about the players on the field in terms of a debut for a play caller for a new scheme that we haven't seen. A scheme change in New Orleans in 16 years. It was pretty cool to see it kind of come off so seamlessly the way it did, and the way they were able to execute on the ground was a big part of that.
Yeah, I think maybe one of the only negatives, again, 10 penalties. I don't know for how many yards, but it didn't seem to impact where they were on the field much, which is good because you ended up with the short field, but that doesn't always work that way, and it won't work that way in Dallas, I don't believe.
No, 10 penalties for 95 yards, that's, you know, I kind of look at it as the coaches are probably almost happy about that because it's just enough for them to be able to walk into the meeting rooms on Monday and give them something to complain about, because no coach wants to walk in and be like, you guys are perfect, no notes, right? What I will say is I went through the list of all the guys with penalties. There was at least, what I will say is there every name on that list was different. There were no repeat offenders, so you can at least say, hey, guys made mistakes. They didn't make them again. So that's a good thing. But again, you know, there's stuff to clean up. In a close game, 10 penalties for 95 yards can be the reason you lose, so it's definitely something they have to look at.
Absolutely. As always, Jeff Nowak, thank you so much for joining us. Truly appreciate it. Look forward to hearing from you next week. Jeff Nowak, the WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Have a great week. Bring home a victory, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we come back, Councilman J.P. Morrell will join us. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by New Orleans City Council Member-at-Large J.P. Morrell. J.P., welcome to the show.
Thanks, Noel.
JP, you guys have been incredibly busy dealing with any number of issues, one being the billing practices of the Sewage and Water Board that continue to be at the forefront of a lot of people's minds. Last week, y'all took some action. Tell us about it.
Well, essentially, we did two major things. First, we essentially created sort of a bill of rights for customers. Some expectations as to what information they should be entitled to while pursuing or contesting a bid, such as mandating that you have access to a picture of your actual meter when you're contesting whether or not it was read, which will start in January. We also ended the ability of Sewage and Water Board to cut off water access to people during extreme temperature situations. And the last and most important thing is, we had a third-party company, HGI, that was doing our appeals of Sewage and Water Board bills. And in the last year and a half of doing that, they've been an excellent partner in trying to get to the backlog. We essentially streamlined the appeals process by eliminating the Sewage and Water Board portion of the appeals process and moving HGI up in the queue. So basically, when you call, first call Sewage and Water Board to go, this bill is incorrect, there you are no longer interacting with Sewage and Water Board customer service. You're dealing with an impartial third party who's going to get to the bottom of it immediately, as well as dealing with older bills that are being contested.
Obviously, y'all felt that that was an appropriate remediation based on, I guess, evidence that y'all have, you know, brought to your attention of, slow walking some of these responses.
Well, essentially, we've been trying to work with Sewage and Water Board existing framework for about almost 2 years, Newell, and customer service at Sewage and Water Board just could never get it right. We had instances, Newell, where we had our own staff who were contesting, a bill, and they were being told that they couldn't contest it and there was no ability to seek an appeal when they knew, because they helped write the original law, that they were entitled to an appeal. And where we really started to get suspicious is that when Sewage and Water Board would say, well, only this amount of people are in the appeal process, we're looking between our staff data and interacting with ratepayers. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of people who are trying to get to the appeal, and they were being stonewalled. And we really realized at that point, we're like, listen, if we can't get good data, if we can't get the customer service operation at Sewage and Water Board to acknowledge and file the existing law, then any effort we have that has them in the middle of it is kind of doomed to failure. And then in the middle of that also, we were getting stellar. First, we were getting fantastic data from HGNI, but more importantly, they're kind of a company that has a reputation of coming in when things are truly busted and trying and like having success in fixing it. And we had reached a point with Sewage and Water Board customer service where we just didn't see a path where they could be remediated to be functional. And so we both have HGI doing the customer service interaction when it comes to bills. And then as simultaneously, Councilmember Geruso has begun looking out for a pilot to actually deal with the bills that are being sent. Because as you know, Newell, the fact that we still have bills going to households for single family homes with two people for $90,000 to $100,000, those bills never should be sent, because in many cases, it's physically impossible for people to use that much water in a month.
Yeah. Obviously, what's important is that Sewage and Water Board be on board with these changes, your sense?
I think, honestly, this time around, I said after 2 years of haggling with them, when it came to this last round of interactions, I think after a little bit of give and take, they are on board, which I think also helped. I mean, I wouldn't say they weren't on board the last time, but I think the nature of the interaction was we were trying to fix something that was too fundamentally broken. Once we both realized, it both acknowledged that this is too broken to fix and we have to outsource it so that people can have a better experience and that it can be finally resolved, and both sides kind of said, this is the best step. I feel like for the first time, probably in 2 years, that this is being. It doesn't really matter. I mean, it matters for us, especially with a hurricane barreling down, that our pipes and our pumping be done properly. But at the same token, if your owner only interaction with Sewage and Water Board on a regular basis is your bill, and your bill is fundamentally wrong many of the times, then your opinion of Sewage and Water Board will always be compromised and terrible. And that you have to treat billing with a sense of urgency. And I think in this last kind of round between the legislature, the governor, and the council weighing in, I think the three of us are now in agreement this is being given a sense of urgency it's deserved this whole time.
Well, that's got to be, I mean, for me, it's really encouraging to hear. And I got to imagine for you that, you know, you guys have been in the trenches, they've been in the trenches. I mean, you've been around long enough to know that when everyone's pulling the wagon in the same direction, things just get done a lot easier, right? And we move forward because we know that on the horizon, we have a whole lot of other challenges that we need to deal with.
That's 100% correct. I mean, it's gratifying because there are other issues with Sewage and Water Board that are, I wouldn't say are more important, but are more pressing. Like, for example, obviously, we have to find the money. The council's likely going to have to find the money in our capital projects to fund the remainder of the power plant for our drinking water as well as our pumps. And it's very important that we get billing behind us so that we can focus our efforts on these things that are much more time sensitive, insofar as we need to make sure those pumps are online for water pumping and for drinking water before next hurricane season. And the setbacks at the legislature, we were on track to definitely be online before next year's hurricane season. If the council doesn't step in to really solve this funding issue, we could lose another hurricane season, and that's not acceptable.
Yeah. JP, I had BGR the other day, Rebecca Moray and their data analyst. I read through the report actually twice, and I was encouraged by what I read. I mean, it seems as though that plan coming together, the maturation of that plan, now that we can look back and say that there are things that have developed that are providing a decent recurring revenue. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think in retrospect, I mean, not in a bad way, but retrospectively looking at it, Fair Share was an excellent plan. It was a culmination of city government, the legislature, and honestly, and not enough credits given to the business industry. The business community were really the heavy in that interaction because, as you know, Newell, at the legislature, the business in general has a disproportionate amount of influence. So we had a lot of the business leaders in the Grand New Orleans area really lend their weight to an effort by the legislature, by the mayor, by the council at that time to get Fair Share done, and it's led to dividends because part of the issue when you have infrastructure challenges is finding reoccurring revenue streams to address them. And it was one of the rare times where everyone was in agreement, we're going to redirect this revenue to key infrastructure challenges, namely a drainage, and actually see some gains. And it was very gratifying that BGR kind of came back and said, yeah, this was a good idea, and it's actually doing what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, so, you know, when you couple, like, what you described last week and then the BGR report, I mean, this is the type of momentum you want to see. But then, of course, JP, we got to hear about the stench at City Hall. What is that about?
Well, I mean, I can only tell you, you know, the interaction we have with the administration is very limited, but from what we understand, what we were told, and I have not personally verified it, nor would I ever personally choose to verify this, apparently there was pesticides used to eliminate the rodent problem, and their rodents died, and a lot of them died in ducks. And it was interesting because the first day, the stench was so bad, we assumed it was a gas leak. NOFD came out and said, nope, not a gas leak. And then that night, Newell, I was telling my staff, I was like, something died. And they're like, no. I was like, no, something or some things died in this building. And that's what we're dealing with. The next day it comes out, yeah, we had rats possibly exploded or not exploded in the ducts. And once they identified the issue, I mean, I've been to City Hall since then. It's cleaned out. But it does send a mixed message of, hey, we're making these great gains on infrastructure, except when the rats blow up in your ducts, and then it smells like a charnel house in City Hall for a couple of days. It's a lot.
Are there days sometimes when you say to yourself, I cannot make this up anymore?
I would say, honestly, there's a moment.
Last week they were talking about power.
Well, it is certainly. I would say
we
there's a moment
a
each day or every other.
Go ahead.
Oh, I said. Well, Newell, it certainly is a moment each day or every other day where truth is stranger than fiction in City Hall. I would argue it's pretty consonant, but that was the most significant thing we'd seen in a while.
Well, it seems as though I was kind of chuckling because I think last week they were talking. They made the announcement that they were going to power wash the exterior of City Hall, which it's needed that for years, quite frankly. And then on the heels of that, we have the rat story, and it's like, oh my God!
I mean, you want to believe this is great. but I mean, the lights are still out on the sign. I mean, at the end of the day, like, I really feel like we're trying to get through, you know, Taylor Swift October and Supergirl next year, but I think a more effort needs to be put towards, we have to build a new City Hall. We finally, working with the governor, secured the property across the street. I don't know how much more lipstick we have to put on this pig, but I think that real effort needs to be on having a public, transparent plan of what that move looks like.
No doubt. I mean, and, you know, and I've said this before, as any number of these buildings, you know, the valuation is dropping precipitously. Building it may not be the best option, but that's just one man's opinion. I think everything ought to be put on the table, quite frankly, because there will be bargains to be had. There was a bargain just a block away from y'all, a real bargain.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if it doesn't happen during this mayor, it's a conversation that could be had. I mean, there is definitively an argument for a retrofit as long as you can fit. I mean, the big challenge, as you know, Newell, you were there when they built that giant, beautiful building in Gretna. But the challenge is that you have real specific space requirements for things like courtrooms and things like council chambers. And that was the death knell what killed City Hall going into charity for a lot of people, because some of these buildings can't simply be retrofitted to meet that criteria. Now, that being said, I will say, and I'm a proponent of, we don't need to put everything in City Hall. We need to build a building that houses those essential services that require those specific space constraints. There's no reason why you couldn't buy a building and house every other part of government, those departments, in a different building. I mean, I agree we don't set out to build another skyscraper to do a massive housing, because you're right, there are a lot of deals to be had in downtown New Orleans, especially in a 1 to 2 block radius of where current City Hall is.
No doubt. I mean, look, you seize the moment. It may work out, it may not, but it's worth the due diligence to go out there and look at it and see whether or not it's going to make economic sense one way or the other. You know, what's interesting is that whenever there's a trial on TV, you watch the trial and you look at the courtroom, and they're not high ceilings in any of those courtrooms. If you remember the OJ trial, if you remember any number of these trials, you know, it wasn't massive courtrooms. And you know what our expectations, our hopes, our desires are for a courtroom may need to change, right? I mean, you know,
that's certainly
other,
a fair
other
point,
jurisdictions
but
seem to be able to do it.
Yeah. No, I mean,
I don't know what's special about our justice here. You know,
well, I mean,
it's
certainly something worth consideration. I don't think City Hall is going to happen under this mayor, and I think that part of what will come out in the general debate over the who's going to be the next mayor of New Orleans, that'll certainly be part of it. It's a tremendous expense one way or another. Whether we're retrofitting or building a building, it's going to have to factor into the capital plan for the next administration. It'll be part of the conversation when that election comes around.
No doubt about it. JP Morrell, as always, thank you so much for joining us. We know you're busy. We appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great week.
You too. Thanks, Noel.
That's JP Morrell, city council member at large. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Give us a shout. We'll be right back. How'd you like to win tickets to the next Saints game when the black and gold take on Philadelphia in the Caesars Superdome? Score two premium tickets to the game plus a pair of VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group. We're talking open bar with premium liquor, all-you-can-eat buffet from celebrity chef Aaron May, and all overlooking Champion Square. Winning's easy. Go to WWL.com/contest and enter for your chance to win the Saints-Eagles tickets from Dudley DeBosier, the official injury lawyers of the Saints and Saints Radio, WWL. Got a couple of announcements. We will be simulcasting the debate between former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. That's on ABC News, that presidential debate at 8 p.m. Tomorrow night right here on WWL and live on the free Odyssey app. And also at 1 o'clock today, we will bring to you live the City of New Orleans press conference. We know we have this storm right off the coast of Louisiana. And we will also broadcast live the press conference of Governor Jeff Landry at 4:30 this afternoon. And Jefferson Parish will have one at 5 p.m. as well. Chris Miller and WWL First News will bring you the big headlines from both during the second guest. So we will be carrying the City of New Orleans press conference today at 1 o'clock. And never mind, they moved it to 3:30. So that's going to take place at 3:30, not 1 o'clock. So never mind on that one. Just a quick change. We'll be right back to see what Scoot has coming your way. Stay with us. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, you know, just like everybody else, what the hell? I woke up this morning and there's this storm heading in this direction. You know, I mean, this was something that was just kind of meandering down there, and it looked like it was maybe going to just kind of drift into Mexico, and now this thing has the potential to become a storm, and it's heading in our direction. So, you know, man, what a sudden change in programming and a change in everything. So, you know, we're going to talk about that. We've got our eyes on that. Also, Angel Reese is talking about some of the criticism she's getting from Caitlin Clark fans, saying there's racism there. So we'll talk a little bit about that. The arrest of Tyreek Hill on his way to the Miami Dolphins season opener. And we'll talk
Did you see that video?
Oh, I mean, really, you know. Black guy Lamborghini, I don't know, suspicious, maybe not. Anyway, we've got a lot to get to this afternoon.
All right, Scoot's up next, headed your way, folks. I hope you enjoyed today's show. Stay dry. We'll see you in the morning. How'd you like to win tickets to the next Saints game when the black and gold take on Philadelphia in the Caesars Superdome? Score two premium tickets to the game plus a pair of VIP tailgate passes from Bullseye Event Group. We're talking open bar with premium liquor, all-you-can-eat buffet from celebrity chef Aaron May, and all overlooking Champion Square. Winning's easy. Go to WWL.com/contest and enter for your chance to win the Saints-Eagles tickets from Dudley DeBosier, the official injury lawyers of the Saints and Saints Radio, WWL. Got a couple of announcements. We will be simulcasting the debate between former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. That's on ABC News, that presidential debate at 8 p.m. Tomorrow night right here on WWL and live on the free Odyssey app. And also at 1 o'clock today, we will bring to you live the City of New Orleans press conference. We know we have this storm right off the coast of Louisiana. And we will also broadcast live the press conference of Governor Jeff Landry at 4:30 this afternoon. And Jefferson Parish will have one at 5 p.m. as well. Chris Miller and WWL First News will bring you the big headlines from both during the second guest. So we will be carrying the City of New Orleans press conference today at 1 o'clock. And never mind, they moved it to 3:30. So that's going to take place at 3:30, not 1 o'clock. So never mind on that one. Just a quick change. We'll be right back to see what Scoot has coming your way. Stay with us. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, you know, just like everybody else, what the hell? I woke up this morning and there's this storm heading in this direction. You know, I mean, this was something that was just kind of meandering down there, and it looked like it was maybe going to just kind of drift into Mexico, and now this thing has the potential to become a storm, and it's heading in our direction. So, you know, man, what a sudden change in programming and a change in everything. So, you know, we're going to talk about that. We've got our eyes on that. Also, Angel Reese is talking about some of the criticism she's getting from Caitlin Clark fans, saying there's racism there. So we'll talk a little bit about that. The arrest of Tyreek Hill on his way to the Miami Dolphins season opener. And we'll talk
about that video.
Oh, I mean, really, you know. Black guy Lamborghini, I don't know, suspicious, maybe not. Anyway, we've got a lot to get to this afternoon.
All right, Scoot's up next, headed your way, folks. I hope you enjoyed today's show. Stay dry. We'll see you in the morning.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.